Hey, welcome to the Antonio Neves Show, where I share powerful stories, actionable lessons, and insights designed to elevate your personal and professional growth. I'm Antonio Neves. I'm the best-selling author of Stop Living on Autopilot, a top executive coach, and an internationally recognized leadership speaker. For me, as a father and a husband, it's all about getting a little bit better every day. I'm fired up because today on the show, I'm being joined by internationally recognized life coach and host of the top Apple podcast, Dream, Think, Do, Mitch Matthews. In a powerful conversation, we dig into some important topics, topics that tend to be overlooked. We talk about how men can start dreaming again. And most important, we talk about how men can overcome something that we all can feel, but we tend to ignore. What I'm talking about is guilt. We also go deep and talk about the importance of investing in yourself, pursuing new goals, surrounding yourself with the right people, and how by doing all of this, it will have a positive ripple effect on those around you. So if you're looking to prioritize your dreams and you want to break free from guilt, this episode is a must listen. But hey, before we get into the episode, I want to let you know about my newsletter that's read by thousands of men and plenty of women all across the globe. It's called Man Morning. Man Morning is a weekly newsletter for married, growth-driven fathers who are committed to getting better. In each issue, I share stories, insights, and lessons that are designed to ignite your personal and your professional growth. Readers absolutely love this newsletter, and so will you. So make sure you head on over to manmorning.com and sign up for free and get an amazing bonus when you do. Okay, let's get into our episode with Mitch Matthews, where we talk about how men can start dreaming again and overcome guilt. Oh yeah, so we're gonna talk about some key things men can do, some permissions they can give themselves to make sure that they keep dreaming again in their lives and the importance of that. But before we hit record, you and I were talking about a variety of things, as we always do, but a subject that came up, as we always do, but this a subject that came up was this word guilt. Yep. I think guilt is a very important place to begin as it becomes to dreams, because what I'm experiencing with the men that I work with and coach, that they feel like they have two lanes in life they can operate in. Mitch, they can operate in family.
Yep.
And they can operate in their work and their J-O-B, and anything outside of that, whether it be spending time with buddies, new hobbies, interests, maybe dreaming, et cetera, they feel guilty when doing that. So I'm curious, in your perspective, you know, working with tons of clients over the years, a lot of successful men, what have you seen with them, or even personally, have you seen with the word guilt when it comes to dreaming?
Yeah. Guilt is such an interesting thing because, you know, any negative emotion oftentimes is more like a light on your dash, right? So if you feel guilt, you know, it's easy to kind of get consumed by that. So like, let's say, you all of a sudden are like, gosh, I'd like to try something new. I'd like to experience something new. Maybe it's a new hobby, a new sport, maybe pursue a new goal. And you start to feel a little guilt because that might pull you away from family, or that might pull you away from your spouse or your commitments, those kinds of things, right? And so if that light on your dash turns on of like, hey, you know what, I'm feeling a little guilt. You know, the good question to ask is to say, all right, what is that? Is it really guilt? Like, why would I be feeling guilt? What is that experience, right? So sometimes, like, especially for a lot of my coaching clients, they're leaders within their organization or founders, but they're also married. They also have kids. So, you know, we'll talk about this. Like, I feel guilt. It's like, okay, what do you think that's associated to? And a lot of times they'll say, well, I feel like I've spent a lot of time away from my family already. So the thought of a new endeavor might, in fact, make me feel guilty because it's like, okay, that represents more time away from my family, potentially. And so it's like, okay, well, one, good. you noticed a light on your dash. That doesn't mean you're in a car accident already. That just means, hey, watch out. There's something to pay attention to, right? But then I always say, hey, we always tend to assume extremes. So if somebody says, I feel guilt for the thought of this maybe pulling me away from my family, it's like, okay, let's pay attention to that and let's flip it and say, wait a second, how might this actually be something you could actually involve your family with? You know, if you're a manager or a leader within an organization and you're thinking about starting your own company, that might be something, right? You might think about starting your own business. How might you actually involve your family? Like the thought of guilt often means that your family's not included. Well, how might you include your family? How might you involve your kids? Not as child labor, of course, but like, how do you talk with them about this dream, saying, hey, I'm having this thought, or maybe you've got an idea for a new hobby. I know for me, oftentimes, especially as our boys were growing up, if I started to think about doing something new, whether it was a new sport, a martial art, whatever, sometimes I might even ask the boys, like, do you guys want to do this together? Do you want to try it out? Should we experiment with this together? So instead of it being something that pulled me away, it actually became something I could pull them into. We could be in together, not in a manipulative way, but in a like, hey, let's share this experience. And at the very least, sometimes it's also the whole thing of, you know, I know we could talk about dreaming, right? Oftentimes the men that I work with, the leaders that I work with, you know, they're quick to vision and set goals for their organization, for their team, but it's rare that they actually take time to dream for themselves, right? So sometimes guilt can just, even the thought of dreaming something of their own, they could start to feel guilty on. But it's like, hey, if that guilt is because you're thinking, hey, maybe it would pull away from your family or cut at the time that you could spend with your significant other or friends, be able to ask, hey, maybe you're feeling the pull to dream. What if you also asked your kids? What if you also asked your spouse? What are some of their dreams? They don't have to be the same dreams, but what if you actually started to make it okay for all of you to dream and dream together and see where it takes you? So it's kind of a beautiful thing.
Yeah, what I love about what you shared is, frankly, the basics of communication, why it's so critical to have good, clear communication with the people in our lives that matter most, with our wives, with our kids. As you were talking, I thought about this example, and maybe you've experienced this as well. We both traveled across the country and speak at a lot of different events. Mitch, I found myself at one point traveling, how I earn an income, you know, provide for the family. I found myself at one point a few years back feeling guilty because if I was at a nice dinner with the client or I was engaging with folks at a networking event and pictures were taking, I found myself every now and then about to post a photo from this great dinner or this event and me smiling, having a good time. But then I felt this guilt. I was like, oh, but my wife's at home by herself with the kids.
Right. Yeah.
And she's going to see this on Instagram or Facebook, and that's just going to activate this. She had a tough day. Here I am eating steak and a nice Bordeaux. And I felt this overwhelming guilt. But I realized at the end of the day, that was hurting me because, you know, sometimes sharing those images, those photos, they can do a lot for business. They can help you out.
Absolutely.
So I had that conversation with my wife and I let her know, like, I feel hesitant sometimes to hit publish on these things that are for the business. And just being able to say that out loud, we opened up this great dialogue, this great conversation. There was no friction there, which was awesome. And second, you'll laugh about this when it comes to my wife and who you know. By the way, Mitch Matthews married my wife and I. How about
them apples? I did. It was a beautiful day. Beautiful day.
So with my man morning group, we meet every Thursday at 7 a.m. For a walk and talk. And so I'd feel guilty because that's prime morning time, getting the kids ready for school and all that when I was gone. And again, I communicated like, oh, I feel bad about leaving, meeting the guys every week. And she said, no, you need to go. I came back better.
Yep.
After spending the time. So have you found equally when men are willing to invest 100%. In themselves that it has not only a positive effect on them, but on those around them as well?
That's exactly right. I think it's huge. And I think, you know, it does come back to communication, especially when we're talking about navigating these things with your spouse or with your family, right? Like, it's one of those things that we as men need. We need community. We need that, you know, man morning time, right? And I know for me, like I have a good friend. We have coffee every Friday morning at 6 a.m. We have consumed thousands of dollars worth of coffee together, right? And it's funny because I look at that and it was Friday morning. So that meant I wasn't around the house to help out on Friday mornings, but that became a part of our rhythm. My wife was very supportive of it because she knew I would come back more centered. She would know I'd come back from an hour of belly laughter and deep conversation. She knew I'd be more peaceful, all of those things. Like it helped me be better. And so it helped me to be a better husband, a better father. But what I also think those kinds of things also, they model, right? So good communication is one of the ways that we get there. But especially when you think about these types of activities for us as a dad, right? Like I know my boys, we have two boys, and I know my boys have sought out better, like brotherly relationships because of the relationship that I have with my buddy that I go and have coffee with every Friday. Like they know, because they know this buddy's name's Travis. They know Travis. Travis is kind of like a surrogate uncle for them, right? And I think they had a different expectation for not everyone in their lives, but they had a different expectation of what friendship should look like because they knew Travis and I were making time for this relationship. He's a busy business guy. I'm a busy business guy. But we're still making time for this. And my boys would see that modeled, not just talked about, but modeled. And so even though it was a little inconvenient on Fridays, I think the payoff, the ripple effect of the payoff is much more dramatic.
Oh, that modeling is so important. And just for folks who are listening, one of the key tenets of Man Morning is that we're a firm believer that 6 a.m. or 7 a.m.
Yep.
coffee or tea is greater than 7 p.m. cocktails and beer. We have no problems with people drinking adult beverages responsibly, but I'll tell you something, the intention at 6 a.m. and 7 a.m., when you meet with a buddy with a group of men, it is so different than meeting at 7 p.m. One is start of the day, you got energy, you're energized, you're drinking caffeine that's going to bring you up, even though technically I think caffeine is a depressant at the end of the day. But it's just, I invite people, like find friends that you can go to breakfast with, that you can have coffee with. Mitch, let's shift here and let's talk about dreaming for a second, because I think once men, you know, we get over 30 years old, maybe even younger, we don't talk about dreams so much. Nope. It's as if dreams are for kids. It's for younger folks. You do that.
Yep.
When you're in high school, you do that. Right. Maybe when you're in college, but then life, you get some Muhammad Ali uppercuts and you're like, you just stop dreaming. So can you talk a little bit about how you define dream and why it's so critical, especially for men who have made their way in life and are quote unquote successful by all societal standards?
Yeah, well, I love it. So I agree with you. One of my podcasts is called Dream, Think, Do. And I didn't want that name. I really didn't. I didn't want to have dream in the name because of that. Like dream, it's interesting, but dream oftentimes does get kind of put over to the category of rainbows, butterflies, little ponies, you know, that kind of thing it's just too airy. It's too, you know, whatever, cotton candy. But I think we as humans, there's a part of us that must dream, right? Like, and it's that whole thing of being able to say, we call it dream, think, do, because I do believe those are three specific steps in allowing yourself to have the best life, because you have to give yourself time and space to dream, which means to create a vision of what it is you want life to look like. What do you want to achieve? What do you want to experience in life? That is dreaming, right? And then there's time to think, which is planning and strategy. And then there's time to do, take action, move forward, right? But so often our thinking invades our dreaming. We start to think too early. We start to shut down dreaming to say, I don't know the right people. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money. And so we shut down the visioning and dreaming. But you see, over the course of time, there are people who give themselves permission and space to dream. And those people tend to be the people that change the world, or at the very least, truly change their world, right? They just live differently because they've decided, you know what, I'm going to give myself some space and time to intentionally think about what do I want life to look like. So whether you want to call it dreaming or goal setting, whatever it is, I really do believe that the power of it is giving yourself that permission, space, and intentionality to say, all right, what do I want life to look like? What do I want to experience more? What are some of those things I want to achieve in my lifetime? And just like you said, and we were talking about earlier, like so often as leaders, we are visioning for our team. We are visioning for our organization, our company, those kinds of things. But it's a little bit more rare, especially as we get older and as we get more successful, it's more and more rare to do that for ourselves. But at the same time, it becomes so much more important, right? Because you see so many people that kind of say, you know what, I'm going to do that kind of thinking, dreaming, visioning. I'll do that kind of thinking when I retire, right? Like whatever that retirement mark is, whether it's 55, 60, 65 or later, right? They'll say, that's when I'm really going to dream about what do I want to experience? What do I want life to look like? Because then I'll have time to do that. Or that's when I'll really, you know, let myself just go for it. But how many of those people do you see, they hit 65 and then they get diagnosed with something or have a heart attack almost immediately? Like, it's crazy how often and sad how often that happens, that they put life off until a specific mile marker. And then sometimes they hit that mile marker and they don't get to experience it. Either that, or they don't have the health to be able to do that. They don't have the relationships to be able to do that. So I always say, don't put those things off. Find ways to start now, right? And when you think about dreaming and being able to say, all right, what do I want to experience more? What do I want to see more in my life? What do I want to achieve more in my life? You know, allow yourself to start small. Give yourself permission to start small. It doesn't have to be major life changes. It can be different things, small things, to be able to say, all right, what are some of the things that I just want to experience more peace in my life? I want to experience more joy in my life. We have events, you know, we have these events called Big Dream Gatherings that we bring people together, encourage people to put dreams up on the wall. We can do it anonymously. And then we just say, all right, guys, look at each other's dreams, see how you can help each other, encourage each other. And had somebody come and they came to a Big Dream Gathering. It was out in Georgia. And then we did one in the same area the next year. And this person came up to me and said, do you remember me from last year? Which I don't know about you, but as a speaker, I hate that question because it's like, I get to meet hundreds, if not thousands of people every year. So, and I can't lie. So I'm like, I don't quite remember. And they were like, well, you wouldn't probably recognize me anyway. I was 100 pounds lighter or heavier. I was 100 pounds heavier last year. I was like, oh, wow. I said, what happened? Was that your dream? Like, what did you want to lose 100 pounds? And they were like, no, it wasn't. I didn't have that dream. I didn't have weight loss as a dream. The dream that I wrote, and they actually showed me this dream sheet. The dream that they wrote down was, I want to experience joy more often. And what I love is that they went to work. They were like, you know what? I did what you said. I allowed myself to start simple. It didn't have to be big, elaborate things. I just started to try to experience more joy in my life day to day. And they said, you know, what's interesting about that experience was that each day that I did that, I found myself eating bad things less. I found myself taking time to exercise. I found taking time to actually, you know, enjoy myself. Like that, my pursuit of joy and experiencing joy more had a ripple effect in the rest of my life. So that's what I always say is, you know, get an essence of a dream. Like some people will like know exactly what a dream might be for them, but others are like, I think it might be this, or it might be a little bit of that. It's like, well, get an essence and then start experimenting.
That's so good. And well, one, how I'm really glad that person didn't come back and said, hey, after I attended your event, Mitch, things really went downhill and I gained 100 pounds. So I'm glad you didn't get that testimony.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That would be a completely different experience, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I love what you shared. You know, a few things really pop out. Is one great reminder. I write about this and Stop Living on Autopilot.
Yeah.
Don't wait for a life-altering event to live the life that you're supposed to be living. You are the life-altering event. So many wait for that heart attack, bad health diagnosis, DUI, divorce, layoff. It's only then that they want to activate and do things. I think something else that's interesting to mention is I find that also as men, We get accomplished. We check off the boxes. We're quote unquote successful. We feel like we can't complain, but some shift happens. And at some point earlier in our life, I find that a lot of men are playing to win. I like to call it.
Yeah.
Think about sports, like a football game. They come out in the first half of the game and they're up 30-0. They're kicking butt. But then something interesting happens, Mitch. It's the fourth quarter, 2 minutes to go.
Yep.
And they were up 30-0 at halftime, and now it's 30-28.
Yep.
What happened? They came out in that first half, they came out playing to win.
Yep.
And then in the second half, they came out playing not to lose.
Yeah.
Those are two different ways to approach life. And I think what's important, and you hit this the nail on the head, is that one thing when it comes to dreaming, when it comes to visioning, when it comes to stretching yourselves, I just want to remind every man or woman that's listening right now is that you don't have to do it alone.
Yep.
And don't necessarily rely on those people immediately in your circle or your household to support you. That's why I'm such an advocate of coaching. Yep. I've worked with you, Mitch, as a coach.
Yeah.
I'm a coach to people. You coach so many different people. And I wish more people, and I hope people are listening, this are willing. Sometimes you have to write a check.
Yep.
And make that investment, that faith statement out loud, sometimes with your checkbook, to invest in yourself, because working with someone else, like whether it be Mitch or me or another coach you find in your community, they're going to be able to activate, see, hear, and do things and hold you accountable.
Yep.
And hold up a mirror for you in a way that otherwise it wouldn't happen. And I saw you nodding your head, so I'm thinking you want to have something to add to that.
Well, it's so true. And it's one of those, like, you know, isn't it ironic that you and I both, you know, we help other people to dream and vision, put a plan in place, and then take action, right? Like, that's our day job. But just because you do it for others, that doesn't mean that it's easy to do for yourself. And I see that in so often with successful entrepreneurs, with successful, you know, business leaders. They do it for everybody else, but they need somebody else to walk alongside them, right? To do it for themselves, because it's not always easy. It can be hard. Sometimes it's stretching, all of those things. Plus, I love the introduction of the coaching, because I also believe in something that's called the Bannister effect. Are you familiar with the Bannister effect?
I'm thinking about, when I hear Bannister, I think about the classic, the runner from back in the day,
right. But I'm not sure. Right. Okay. So Roger Bannister, that's exactly right. The runner that you're thinking about, Roger Bannister in 1954 decided he was going to try to run a sub 4 minute mile. Okay. 1954, he was a track star in the United Kingdom. And what's interesting is in 1954, doctors said, don't do it, because they believed that if a human being ran a sub 4 minute mile, their heart would explode. They thought that that would actually end the person's life if it was achieved. But Roger Bannister was a medical student, and he said, I don't believe that. I'm going to go for it. And so he actually ran on a track on a Sunday morning outside Oxford, England. He ran a sub 4 minute mile. Now, what's interesting is that each mile, someone ran with him, a different pacer ran with him to help him to do that, right? And then he actually did it. He ran a sub 4 minute mile. Now, you think about that. What's crazy about that is, one, he needed somebody running with him to push him, even, you know, keep him going on that goal, right? But what I love about this thing is that in 1954, it was the first time in recorded history a human being ran a sub 4 minute mile, right? Now, you think about that. Now, we don't know. There could have been a caveman that outran a saber-toothed tiger, you know, thousands of years ago. That's not recorded, right? But for recorded history, which means thousands of years, no one ran a sub 4 minute mile. Roger Bannister did it in 1954. Now, guess how long it took for someone else to break the four-minute mile?
It was quick, I bet. I bet it was quick.
46 days.
Wow.
Thousands of years to get it done. But then once somebody did it, 46 days. Psychologists call that the Bannister effect. And the Bannister effect is basically positioning yourself close to others who are achieving and doing the things that you want to do. And that raises your chances of being able to accomplish that exponentially. And so I love that. I mean, being a coach, we don't ever, you and I both never say, hey, we've got it all together, follow us because we're perfect. That is not it, right? But we're doing a lot of these things in some ways. For some people, we're the pacer, right? Helping you get that goal that seems impossible. We're the pacer that helps you do that. Sometimes though, it is just getting yourself closer to people who are thinking differently that can help you to achieve something faster. And, you know, you're able to go faster and go further than you ever thought possible.
Yeah. I mean, we got to surround ourselves. Well, you know, I'm going to hold that thought for a second because let's talk about permissions here and what permission is a dream. But as you're telling that story about Bannister and doctors telling him not to run a sub 4 minute, I think about this classic story about Bruce Lee, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but there's a classic story about Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee is training and he's running with someone. And at some point, the guy running with Bruce Lee says, I can't keep going. And Bruce Lee says, how come you can't keep running? They're going at this brisk, aggressive pace. And the guy says, if I keep going, I think I'm going to die. And then they said, Bruce Lee said, then die. Like, keep going, then die.
Yeah.
I just love
keep
that
going
mind.
Keep going or die. Yeah, exactly.
I just like that mindset. He's like, well, then die. Like, I'm not giving you permission to quit. The same way those guys, each lap, ran around with Bannister, right? You knew he wasn't going to die. But a new level. A new level was unlocked, and I think coaches, we have that gift to do so. So let's go here, because you just kind of, I think, is a good opportunity to double-click and to piggyback on something you said. You shared some permissions with me that men can use to start dreaming again, to make sure they're continuing to strive, to make sure they're continuing to play to win. And this one is so good and so apropos. I love saying the word apropos.
That's so good. I can't spell it, but I love saying it.
You or me both. But you said one of the permissions men can give themselves when it comes to dreaming is permissions to create a new tribe.
Yep.
Unpack that, man.
It's so important. And I don't know about you, but, you know, I use the example that before I had my own business, I worked in the pharmaceutical industry. And when I first got into the industry years ago, it was a good fit for me. It was a high relationship sell. It was a high science sale. I enjoyed it immensely, right? But then the industry started to change. I started to change. And I started to get this nudge that maybe it was time to start my own business. And what's interesting is that when I started to share that with some of my friends in the pharmaceutical industry, you know, these are people that I had worked with for years, people that had known me in this capacity of being in the pharmaceutical industry, that made them uncomfortable. Now, I didn't know that, right? What it looked like was more, you know, responses like, are you crazy? You know, look at your benefits package. Look at what you make. Look at what the company provides. Are you nuts? Like, the thought of walking away from those kinds of things. Now, that could have looked like wisdom. It certainly felt like condemnation, right? But what I realized is that, you know, some of that I would love to believe is some of that was truly, you know, concern. But I realize now, looking back, that sometimes when you start to pursue or explore a new dream, sometimes that can make some of the people in your current tribe uncomfortable. Just because sometimes they maybe know they should be doing something different. And the very thought that you're thinking about doing something different makes them uncomfortable, right? So what I had to do is I had to start exploring, finding new people. I had to build a new tribe. I had to start connecting with people who were doing more of the things that I wanted to have in my life. They were doing, you know, achieving some of these things in this new area. So I traveled a lot when I was in my last position in the pharmaceutical world, but I knew I was always going to be in town on Fridays. And so this was years ago, but I basically set aside a time on Friday mornings. And I tried to have somebody, I tried to meet, there was a Panera that was just blocks from my house, right? And I tried to meet a different entrepreneur, a different thinker, a different innovator every Friday morning at 7 a.m. because I knew that time was going to be a time that I could protect. And what it allowed me to do is it allowed me to start meeting new people. And what's amazing about that is, you know, some of those people I met with once, that was it. Great meeting. I bought them some coffee. No harm, no foul. We didn't continue to connect. But some of those people became my new tribe. And some of those people became people that I still hang with every week. We still spend time together. They became people that really were in my mastermind that helped me to get the right mindset, to take the right steps, to move forward, to help me realize I wasn't crazy, right? I was just different than my old tribe. And I think sometimes it's so tempting when you're in one tribe to think, well, this is it. This is what I'm locked into. This is what I can expect, right? Because it's what's familiar. It's what you know. But you can start to take those small steps to build a new tribe. And as you do that, what's amazing is it opens up all sorts of perspectives and opportunities. You just have to be intentional to start.
It opens up so much. What a great reminder that sometimes our success, our striving, our dreaming can threaten others because 100%. It can hold up a mirror to what they are potentially not doing in their lives. It's a reflection of that. And you got to be very leery. You bring up a really good point, Mitch, because I mean, I'm always leery of the guy in the meetings. We all know that guy in the meeting where we're sharing ideas, we're making great progress, and that guy crosses his arms. And what does he say? He says, just playing devil's advocate. And I'm like, how about this? How about we have more people in our lives not playing devil's advocate, but God's advocate?
Yeah. Yep.
How about them apples? Where are those people? That's what we need to move forward. That's not being Pollyannish. Yep. That's not being naive.
Right.
But we need more people playing God's advocate.
Yep.
And that's what the Man Morning community is all about. That's what the community you're talking about, those people around you that encourage you, that inspire you, that challenge you, that push you and hold you accountable. I think I need to add one more thing on this, and briefly, maybe you can share something on this. I want to remind folks that this tribe Mitch is talking about building, the Man Morning crew that I meet with every Thursday here in LA, and the different Man Morning chapters across the country where men meet for that walk and talk and the coffee. Let's be clear. These men aren't always best friends.
Right.
They're not kicking it every single day and texting every single day, but they get together with a purpose in mind. And so I found that myself, like I have a great group of guys. Do all of us talk every single day? Would all of us consider ourselves the best of friends amongst one another? No, but when we get together, we're committed. We form Voltron, right? And make magic happen. So I want to remind you that these folks don't have to be like your best friends in the world, right?
Absolutely. And I love how you always talk about that. It's not about calling somebody out. It's calling somebody up. And I know, so often when you hear about great friendships or when you hear about a great network or when you hear about somebody that's surrounded by great people, I guarantee you that didn't happen by accident. It's a little bit like, Sir Edmund Hillary climbing Mount Everest. He didn't get up there and go, "Wow, how the heck did this happen?" Right? Like, he was wildly intentional, which is another great example of it's all about who you surround yourself with, right? But I think this is exactly what we're talking about. And I think sometimes people are like, well, how do I start? Especially if they've got a busy schedule or they feel locked into their current network of the people they know. It's like, well, find small ways to start, right? Whether it's, finding a Man Morning somewhere or starting a Man Morning and just inviting a couple of guys that you think, hey, I think I might want to get to know them better. Let's just learn about each other. Or, just set one time aside each week to try to meet somebody new. I know that was how you did it in New York. Like, you just kept meeting with people, inviting people to coffee, just finding out about them, being curious about them. And that helped you to build an incredible network in a completely new environment, right? And I think those kinds of things can be powerful. I think one of the other things too is to look around and say, is there a class you can take? Is there training you can take? I interviewed a guy named Sean Askinosi. And Sean was a wildly successful district attorney, like unbeatable district attorney. But he realized he was starting to lose passion for the law. And he didn't just quit. What he did was he started to experiment. He started to look around and say, what am I curious about? Maybe I just need a new hobby. And so he started to take some different classes, different night classes, right? He didn't go and say, oh, I'm quitting law. He's like, I'm just going to, try some new things, test some things out. And he found chocolate. Actually just found that he actually enjoyed eating chocolate, but he also enjoyed making chocolate. And then he started to like dive into how chocolate was made on a larger scale. And he started to realize that, his passion for justice and the law actually started to spill over into how chocolate was being made around the world. And he actually started to go to places where they were, where the chocolate and the cocoa beans would actually come from, and started to realize, wow, these big companies are beating these growers up. And so he started to create the small batch chocolate company. And it was just these little experiments over time. And what's beautiful is now he's one of Oprah's favorite chocolate makers. He's been recognized by Fortune magazine and Entrepreneur magazine. And he makes a small batch chocolate that's his full-time gig now. And they're sending chocolate literally around the world. And he is lit up and freaking passionate about it. But he will be the first one to tell you the way he found that was not just by immediately quitting the law. He just took a night class and just kept experimenting until he found that thing.
He started with the night class. That you mentioned the law made me think about the John Grisham story. When he wrote A Time to Kill, he was an attorney at that time. And he got up, I think he's like a couple hours early every single day. And he wrote that version of A Time to Kill and ended up getting rejected so many times, but ended up getting published as well. And briefly, before we move on to another permission, I know a lot of people are going to listen to this. And the refrain that I hear all the time is, must be nice, Tony, you live in Los Angeles where there's a lot of different people are available to you. Must be nice, Mitch, that you happen to know all these people. When in doubt, to Mitch's point, go to where people grow.
Yeah.
Go to places where people grow to get better. Mitch mentioned classes. I want to mention personal development conferences, faith organizations, group coaching programs. I lead group coaching programs. Mitch leads group coaching programs. These places exist. When in doubt, go to places where people go to grow. Let's get to another permission. So we talked about permission to create a new tribe. You talked on this for a little bit about starting small. I like that idea of starting small. But this one is interesting that I really, really like. And I think this is the one that we're pretty much unwilling to do a lot. And you say we have to give ourselves permission to be a novice, to be a beginner. Talk about that some.
Man, I tell you what, especially with your audience, you've got rock stars that are listening. You've got successful men that have achieved, right? And oftentimes those are people that have achieved at work. They have achieved maybe even in some of their hobbies. Maybe they're a really good golfer. Maybe they're accomplished in a sport. That probably people look at them and go, look at that. They're freaking successful on all fronts, which is great. The challenge with that and the danger with that is oftentimes when we achieve success in a number of areas in our life, that makes it less and less likely that we try something new.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, I think, also about our culture, and I'm not negative on sports or anything like that, but it's interesting. Like, I grew up in Iowa. You grew up in Michigan. Like, you know, we played all the sports, not because we were good. It's just because we were needed, right? Like, I was horrible at basketball, but I at least represented, like, we need five guys. Oh, crap. Well, Matthews, all right, go ahead and get it. Like, we found all these things. We tried all these things. You know, now so often I'm seeing, you know, parents say, oh, we got to lock into a sport at 7. Like, if you know they're going to do well in soccer, we got to find the right program so that they're going to be amazing at soccer and get a scholarship to school and all those things, right? We are like, there's so much pressure to be so good at things immediately. And I think this is, you know, for our kiddos, but I think it's for us. You have to give yourself permission to be a novice, to try something new. And that might mean going to a night class. That might be going to a program. I give you an example. We talked a little bit about this, but this can be in so many different areas. And prayer is a big part of my life. And my wife and I are very involved with the prayer ministry at our church. And this past weekend, we actually had a workshop where some guest speakers came in and they were talking about prayer. And one of my good friends actually came, and he's very accomplished doctor, very accomplished, really good golfer, really good skier. And this conference was a Friday night and a Saturday. And we went Friday night, and I get a text from my buddy saying, hey, I'm not coming back tomorrow. He's like, I don't want to complain or anything, but I don't know. I felt really stretched. I didn't feel very good at what we were talking about. You know, like, I wouldn't feel like I was good at it. Like, I didn't get a good grasp on it. I think he was almost maybe a little embarrassed. It didn't really click for him. And I was like, hey man, I appreciate you texting me. I really do. I said, but I want to remind you, like, were you a good golfer the first time you went out on the course? Like, did you ever shank it like hard in front of your friends? Were you immediately good skiing, you know, the first time you went down, or the 10th time or the 100th time, or when you went first time you went Black Diamond, were you just amazing? It's like, nah, you sucked. Right. But those events happened so long ago, you don't remember not being good at them. I said, dude, you got to give yourself permission to suck at some things from time to time, right? Like you don't remember not being good at something. That means it's time to do something new that you're not good at. So, and then I was like, respectfully, this class is about prayer, but get your ass there tomorrow. And he did. He showed up.
It's critical to have people in our lives that are willing to be honest with us.
Yeah.
Right. To tell us the truth. I think because that conversation could have went a whole other way. Yeah. I'm a firm believer, Mitch, that most people, and I'm a loving, compassionate, empathetic, caring person.
You are.
And I also believe that a lot of people don't necessarily need another pat on the back. You know what? It's okay. I understand if you don't want to show up tomorrow. That's all right. Most people don't need that pat on the back. Most men, in my experience, what they need is what Mitch Matthews did for his friend, and that is to tell him the truth.
Yep.
To be honest, reflect to him what's really going on, to tell him the truth. And because of that, and because of the way you did it, the tact. I don't know if anyone here ever wants to learn how to be a great coach, by the way. Rewind back a little bit and listen to how Mitch did that. Mitch didn't make any statements to that dude primarily. He primarily asked that guy questions that allowed him to unpack and unravel and build up some confidence so he could show up the next day. That's what great coach, he didn't consult him. He coached him to
that's
that.
Right.
So that's beautiful. I love that you did that for him. I love that he showed up. And I love this idea of the permission to be a novice, especially when we get older. It's so important. Hey, let's do one more. Can we do one more?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
All right. So this is one that I want to hear about because it caught me off guard when we shared some emails back and forth about what we can talk about. So I'm curious what you're going to say with this one. I have an idea, but you said permission to position yourself.
Yeah.
Permission to position yourself.
Yeah. So I think what's so wild is that so often, especially when I work with entrepreneurs, leaders, founders, so often their identity gets connected to the things they've had success with in the past, right? That's the story that is told about them. That is the story they start to accept, right? That is the story they start to live by. And in some ways, the story that they start to be contained by, right? What's powerful though, is to say, you know what? I'm going to give myself permission to position myself differently, right? And to release myself. That is not your only story. Your success in one area is not your only story. Now, I am very quick to say, like, you know, part of my specialty when I'm coaching people is helping them make big decisions, right? Helping them decide, hey, should I move the company or should I change careers? Should I shift things? And I'm a big believer in small steps. You know, I believe in small steps of faith as opposed to blind leaps of faith. I see those working out so much more often. Now, there are times in life where you do have to take a big old blind leap of faith, but most of the time it's small steps of faith over time. So what I find is that, you know, sometimes helping someone release themselves from just one story, he's a great leader or he's an entrepreneur, those kinds of things, to allow yourself to position yourself in a small way, in a new way, is just a series of small steps. As an example, like Bob Goff, as an example, wildly successful author now, his biggest book is Love Does, wildly successful. Now, he was an attorney at the time. What's interesting about, you know, his story is he didn't quit law immediately. He just gave himself permission. It's kind of like John Grisham's story, and, you know, gave himself permission to just start writing a little bit each day, right? Just position himself in a new way. Now, no one thought of Bob Goff when he was starting this process. No one thought of him as an author because he's not written anything. And I mean, he is very social, but he wasn't really a presence on social media either. But he had to give himself permission to position himself in a new way, to be able to say, all right, I may not be seen as a successful author yet, but I can actually see myself as an author now, today. It's not, you know, the success is not what gives me permission. It's me taking small but significant steps on a consistent basis. That's what allows me to actually step into this new thing. So I always say, you know, like, don't wait for your story to line up or the way that everybody, or the way that you think everybody thinks about you to let that position yourself. start to position yourself in a new way.
Yeah. And what I like about that, and this really connects to the first thing you shared about permissions as it relates to finding a new tribe. One of the best things about a new tribe, different people you meet with every single week, whether it's at a conference, whether it's through a group coaching program, whether it's through a class, is that you get to show up with a blank slate.
Yep.
They don't know your past stories, how the world positions you. They just know you, the guy they met for the first time tonight. So that power of positioning, especially when you have a new tribe, you can start fresh. So I think that's huge. Something else that jumped up is I shared something not long ago on social media that got a lot of love. And to your point, most people don't need to blow things up. You don't necessarily need to quit your job immediately, move to a brand new city.
Right.
What you want to do is exactly, in my opinion, is what Mitch is advocating, is build a bridge.
Yep.
Build a bridge to that new chapter, to that next chapter in your life, as opposed to blowing things up. And unfortunately, I think far too many people feel like, because of social media, that they need to blow things up. And as a coach, very rarely have I seen that work in people's favor. Mitch, you know, the last question I have for you, of course, you're going to come on again. And I just need to say this out loud for the public record. I think I've been on Mitch's Dream Think Do podcast. I think I've been there the most.
You're a record holder. That's exactly right. You are a record holder.
Hundreds and hundreds of episodes. I think I'm number one. So
yeah, we are quickly approaching 400 episodes, and Antonio has been there the most, baby. You were actually one of the first episodes of Dream Think Do. So and that's how we met, right? Like, that first conversation was what sparked a friendship. So, you know, and honestly, Dream Think Do is yet another example of what we're talking about. I didn't know what I was doing. I just realized I like having conversations. So I started to have those conversations, and I started to record them with the belief of, hey, maybe someday I'm going to have a podcast. And I just recorded 10 of those and then realized I think this could be fun. And so we launched a podcast, right? So it was an experiment that then blossomed into something that.
Yeah. And now it's like one of Apple's like top in the top 1% of all podcasts out there,
which is nuts. Mitch,
this new thing I'm going to do to end, and this is starting with you.
Yeah.
But again, I don't think we get to answer this question enough. It just happens to be a Friday today when we're recording. Mitch, my question for you is, what is something, Mitch Matthews, that you are celebrating today, big or small, personal,
I love it,
professional?
You know, we've had a lot of breakthroughs. It's been a very, very good week. But I realized this week, just earlier this week, honestly, and you know, I coach people on this, right? The idea of feeling more peace, the idea of feeling more joy as you achieve, right? As you do more of what you were put on the planet to do. I coach people on this. But this week it was interesting because we've had some challenges. We've had some setbacks. We had some team members need to change and all these kinds of things, right? Like, and life just happens. And, just to add some stressors. And I started to realize, like, some of that stress had kind of set in, right? I was starting to experience that more than I was experiencing joy or peace or all of those things. And I just realized earlier this week, it's like, wait, if we wait for joy to be on the other side of that to-do list item, like if we wait for joy and peace to be the result of an event or a milestone, it's going to be forever elusive, right? But if I realize, you know what, peace, joy, those aren't dependent on circumstance.
Yeah.
I can actually have those right now. That doesn't mean I'm going to be any less likely to work hard to try to achieve those things, but my joy, my peace can be right here. And that settle in. I just had one of those moments. You know what I mean? It's that thing of like, I know this to be true, but on Tuesday of this week, I felt it. Like, I knew it in my inner knower to be true. And what was interesting was I like felt just an overwhelming sense of peace and joy. And what's fun with that is I wrapped up my day, and my wife works at our church. And so I actually just drove to church. You know, normally we'd come home, we'd have dinner here, but I drove to church and I courted my wife. I just showed up and I said, hey, I don't think we have anything planned. She's like, what are you doing here? I was like, I want to go on a date. I would like to take you on a date. And we had like a spontaneous date, and we just drove around, and it was great. It wasn't one of those things where I had to feel like I had to wait for, you know, a certain dollar figure or a certain thing to be done or an event to be behind us. I just enjoyed it, right? And the ripple effect has been fun. So that's something I'm celebrating this week. And it's one of those where it's like, it's something I've known, it's something I've understood, but I felt it differently this week. And I'm celebrating that.
Yeah, well, I'm honored and thankful that you're willing to share that and answer that question again. Yeah. It's a question that a lot of men, unfortunately, we don't answer a lot, or we don't even
get asked. Well, it's because we don't ask it. And especially as men, what I love about this is that you and I are in relationship, right? Like, we are brothers. We have been there for each other during the low times, during the high times, all of those things. And I think there's such a gift in what you're doing with this podcast and what you're doing with Man Morning and just everything. Is I think it's sadly, I think, you know, the whole thing of men not encouraging each other or men not being in a safe place, or that like showing emotion or exploring the things we're exploring somehow would get put into like weakness. It's like, no way, man. This is strength, right? To fortify each other, to actually ask these kinds of questions and be men as we do it, dude. We will be an unstoppable force as more and more of this happens. So thank you for being the catalyst that you are for making that happen, because I think a lot of the world's problems could actually be solved if dudes were just willing to talk with dudes.
I couldn't agree more. I appreciate your kind words. I'm thankful for you for joining me on the podcast. Of course, we're going to do this again. So Mitch Matthews, folks who want to learn more about you, where would you like them to go?
Probably the best place to go is MitchMatthews.com. That's kind of where our whole orbit starts, all that. And I just want to invite people to check out our podcast, Dream Think Do. And I have a second podcast called Encouraging the Encouragers, which is more for coaches, speakers, and content creators. So come hang out with us. And we definitely want to keep you encouraged as you dream bigger, think better, and do more of what you're put on the planet to do. So thank you.
Yeah, and all those links will be in the show notes. Mitch, thank you again for joining me, man. We'll touch base real soon.
Keep up the great work, brother.
Yeah, man. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Antonio Neves Show. I hope you are fired up to start dreaming again. For more information about the episode you just heard, head on over to my website at theantonioneves.com. Hey, if you still haven't followed The Antonio Neves Show yet or left a review, I kindly request that you do so right now. This is how we can spread the word, and it goes an extremely long way. Also, hey, if there's someone that you know would absolutely dig this episode, go ahead and push that share button right now and share it with your friends, your family, and your colleagues. All right, I will see you back here next week with another amazing episode. In the meantime, I want you to remember that no one owes you anything, but you owe yourself everything. I want you to remember that people care about you, but no one can care more about your life than you do. And hey, I want you to remember that the best is ahead. When you work and believe like the best is ahead, things begin to change for the better. Never forget, you have a say in this.